Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 305. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's good. Good. Hope you're doing well, too. A lot of good baseball. Got another big call-up to talk about, so that is fun. And, yeah, it's going to be a good show. I feel like we're finally getting some sizable enough samples now where we feel pretty good about some players and performances at this point. I think that actually helps us to be able to, you know, break it down a little better, see what's legit, what's not, and it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, at this point, we have hitters have 120, 130 plate appearances, something like that. Pitchers are up 25, 30, 35 innings. So yeah, I think that's starting, it's not a big sample size, but it's not a small one anymore either. It's starting to be legit of a sample size for sure. So I know you just put out your recent Dynasty rankings update. I'm doing mine right now. As we figure, we talked some Dynasty risers and followers. We talked some prospect risers and followers recently. So we'll hit the MLB Dynasty side of it now. And then we picked some names there's a lot of other names that we could have talked about, like Andy Páez, Shota Imanaga, but we've talked about them recently. So we tried to pick out some names that we haven't talked about within the last 2, 3, 4 episodes or so. And got a fun mix of players here. But, of course, we'll start off with the big promotion with Paul Skeens here. And this someone, I forget who tweeted it out a little while ago, but someone said, is this the most hyped prospect promotion on the pitching side since way back in Steven Strasburg, which was, 20? We heard the Strasburg debut 2011, 2010, something like that.
Been a while.
And it just might be with how hype Skeens has been, obviously absolutely dominant in the minor leagues so far. 7 starts this year for AAA Indianapolis, 27 1/3 innings, 0.99 ERA, 0.92 whip, 45 strikeouts to just 8 walks in those 27 1/3 innings. Obviously, we both have him as top 10 overall prospects. We have him as the number 1 pitching prospect. What are your long-term thoughts and projections for Skeens? Is it like a no-brainer to you that he's probably going to become another top 10 pitcher in this game?
Yeah, it seems like it's a real possibility that he just completely takes off. He's got all the skills and intangibles to be one of the best arms in the game, I think, pretty immediately. We've seen that. Obviously, AAA majors, completely different breeds there, and it is going to be an adjustment. But when I look at this profile, I think that ultimately we will see Skeens excel right off the bat. I know that everybody is nervous, like, how's he going to be used? Are they going to let him go? Of course, like, they are going to probably baby him. They want to preserve their arms. We've seen Jerry Jones have some weird things where, like, he only threw 59 pitches in one of the starts just randomly in the middle of the year. And Skeens may have these instances where they built him up slow. People are like, he's not ready. He's not, don't have enough innings built up. It doesn't matter. Like, it was not a factor of innings. This guy threw the, like, max amount of pitches and innings last year in college baseball. So to me, like, that says, okay, like, this guy is ready to go. He probably could have pitched, like, right out of the gate last year after being drafted, which is wild to say because most can't. But ultimately, I think Paul Skeens was that kind of talent, very unique. One of the most impressive college pitchers we have ever seen. And last year, he struck out 209 across 122 and two-thirds innings in SEC baseball, which is very highly competitive. Fastball consistently sits 100 miles an hour. And I don't think that I think everybody's like, at this point, people might be like, oh, that's not a good thing. I don't really see that as like a bad thing just because velocity is the high velo guys are the ones that have been injured. I think I'm not going to say it's a fluke, but I'm going to say that I don't think that necessarily means that Paul Skeens is going to come up and get hurt. I will say that. Look at Skeens, look at the profile, and I think that he's done everything he needs to do to put himself in a place to succeed. He's added, you know, the splitter to his arsenal, which is just insanely nasty. He already had a obviously elite fastball. And then the slider and change are really good too. And I know he didn't really need the changeup in college because fastball slider were so good. You saw the changeup against Jackson Holiday in the spring breakout game. It was really awesome to watch. Like, it was just made Holiday look foolish. And Holiday's a pure hitter. So I think that Skeens now has a well-rounded enough arsenal where he can step right in and excel. He has deep arsenal. He's going to pump the fastball by you. People are going to gripe that, oh, it's dead zone, but doesn't matter. When you throw it 100 and you locate it exactly where you want it to be located, fastball, splitter, like, all these are really good offerings. So I think that when you throw in a splitter at 95, I mean, good luck, hitters. That's all I got to say. I wouldn't be shocked if there's some bumps in the road. I know Jared Jones has set the expectation really high. He came up and just hit the ground running. And I also wouldn't be shocked if Skeens has some bumps. Most pitchers do. Most prospects come up and struggle a little bit. At the end of the day, no, I think that Paul Skeens sets himself up really well to be a ace long term. And there's not many pitchers that I would say that about. At the end of the day, I really like Paul Skeens, obviously, as everybody does. But I'm very excited to see what he does. I'm happy that he's finally getting the chance in Pittsburgh.
Man, Mitch Keller went from Pittsburgh's number one to Pittsburgh's number three in about a month.
Really?
With the emergence of Jones and now Skeens getting the call. And, you know, Keller's a decent arm. I don't think anyone ever called him an ace, but he's a decent arm. But yeah, he's now their number three. And they got some more arms along the way next year or two. So it'd be a pretty good rotation there in Pittsburgh. See if they can get some hitting around it. But yeah, Skeens is, if there's any pitching prospect that I would make step in and just be a dude right away that can have that Yuri Perez level impact right away, or even a Jared Jones level impact right away right now. I love Cade Horton. I love Jackson Jobe. I even had Jackson Jobe ahead at one point in my rankings because he had a phenomenal year last year. And I still think these two are pretty close long term. But yeah, Jobe is still a bit away. As you mentioned, Skeens could have probably stepped in last year. Like, he's ready. And I'm surprised he took seven starts in AAA. They really slow played this, building up the, you know, 45 to 55 to 60 pitches, etc. Really slow played him this year. He wasn't even averaging four innings per start in those seven games. But yeah, like, he's already inside my top 20 for dynasty pitcher rankings right now. It's a massive glob in this range with a lot of guys like Yamamoto, Jones is in there, Freddy Peralta, Reagans, Gilbert, etc. So didn't really want to put him go too crazy in my ranking for him. He's top 75 overall for me right now. At this very moment, he's 73, still tinkering with it a little bit, but he could easily, if he hits the ground running, he could easily be up into the George Kirby range pretty darn quickly and be inside my top 50 overall, be borderline top 6, 7, 8 overall dynasty pitcher. Because that's the upside. He has the upside to challenge, maybe be the best pitcher in baseball. That's like the long-term upside we're talking about here with Skeens. Dominant arsenal. Strikeout rate's going to be insanely high. He's going to be challenging for strikeout titles. Has pretty decent command as well. That thing doesn't walk a ton of guys, which is also very encouraging to see. So yeah, everything, like you, when you look at the description of an ace or a frontline guy or a stud pitcher, whatever you want to call it, the check boxes, like he checks them all off with a, you know, not with this, like a freaking Sharpie, man. That is what you look for. Skeens has it all. And let's just hope that Pittsburgh doesn't screw this up, because that's going to be a really fun. Imagine if they got into the postseason and games 1 and 2 of a series, you got to face Jared Jones and Paul Skeens. Good freaking luck. That's going to be tough right there, but it's Pittsburgh, so who knows? Hasn't really been any other big promotion. Heliot Ramos got the call earlier today. But that was really the one big one, noteworthy for fantasy purposes. But also we've had a lot of promotions over the last couple of weeks. We had Beck, LaPerfido, Black, who's actually just got demoted today, Christian Scott, etc. So several of the bigger name stashes are now up. But Chris, who are you looking at next? Obviously, we still got the big names here. We're still waiting on Junior Caminero. We're still waiting on Kobe Mayo. People are hoping James Wood. I still don't think it's going to be as imminent as, you know, Mayo and Caminero. Aurelvis is right there on the cusp as well. Kate Horton's now in AAA, so he's inching closer. And who are some other names that you'd be looking to stash right now that we've had all these promotions over the last couple of weeks?
I think the pickings are getting a little more slim at this point. Everybody's going to want Wood. They're going to want Mayo. They're going to want Caminero. But I'm not sure that any of them are imminent. You look at this. Obviously, Wood has a clear path to playing time. That doesn't mean they're going to push him. I know he had 2 home runs today, and everybody thinks that it's right now. He may force their hand, but I still think that James Wood has some things to work on in the minor leagues. And I think that the team probably benefits from keeping him down another month or two. Mayo, where in the world is he going to play? I wouldn't be shocked if Mayo spends nearly all of the season in AAA. I think that's actually percentage chance than not that Kobe Mayo stays in AAA until August or September, because at the end of the day, look what has happened with Heston Kjerstad. Yeah, I understand that obviously Ramon Urias is not all that great, but at the end of the day, I think that the Orioles want a hitter like Mayo playing every day, and that may mean in AAA. The Rays have come out and said that Caminero's return is not imminent, which is, seems really stupid in my opinion. They need him. And obviously, all of these teams could use these respective hitters that we're talking about. But I don't know. I don't see a clear path for any of these guys. Talking to some Blue Jays guys today, actually, I don't think Aurelvis Martinez is up very soon at all. Kevin Biggio and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa have been hitting enough. And we talk about when everybody makes a joke, always working on defense. Aurelvis Martinez actually needs work on defense. He's playing
that one's base. Legit. Yeah.
I mean, dude's made a ton of errors this year. It's always played a second base and making a ton of errors. That's legit. You don't call up a guy to sit the bench or pinch hit and play start once or twice a week. You don't do that with a top prospect. And so you look at the call ups that have happened so far. If we go back and let's just review through the call-ups, and they all make sense in a way where either they weren't blocked or there was injuries that kind of needed those call-ups. Manzardo was ready for one, and there was an injury that allowed him to come up. Brian Ramos, the White Sox are terrible, injuries. Christian Scott, injury. And Scott was more than ready anyway, and there wasn't really anybody blocking him in that rotation. You go look at some of the other big ones. Like at Jordan Beck, there was an injury. It was Nolan Jones. Tyler Black, there was an injury, and he's just got sent down. Joey LoProfito, there was a path to playing time because Jose Abreu was so bad and the outfield had not been good. Some of these other guys just don't have that. And so I think that it's certainly you have to consider that. I think that just because a hitter is hitting in AAA doesn't mean that their call up is imminent. I think there's so many factors that play into a team's decision in a call up that we have to really factor these things in. And there's teams that are going to skip guys through AAA. You don't know. And so I think that there are some names. Obviously, we've talked about a lot of the big names. But at the end of the day, that doesn't mean that these guys are like, all right, they're coming. Like, they're ready to go. Unless it's one of those guys that just surprises me, I think it may be a little bit before we see the next one kind of splashy prospect get the call. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe I'm totally misreading the tea leaves here and, you know, trying to source things out. But yeah, I'm not overly confident that Wood, Kamner, or Mayo are up soon at all.
Now, order the three you just mentioned, Wood, Kamner, and Mayo. Order them in order of promotion soonest to furthest away. What do you think?
I still think that it's probably Kamner, Wood, and then Mayo. The Rays came out and say this, but I still think that if I'm completely honest, and maybe this is just too much tinfoil hat, the AL Rookie of the Year race is still wide open. Kamner comes up today. He could still win Rookie of the Year realistically. And if he were to win it, he would get a full year of service time, but the Rays get nothing because he wasn't up within that 2-week window at the beginning of the year. Maybe that's reading way too much in the situation, but this is a reality. Sometimes there are loopholes in this new prospect promotion system. And I think that you're seeing it here. I really do, where the Rays may lose a year of service time and they would not even get a draft pick if he did happen to win the Rookie of the Year award. So I still think Kamner probably is up within the month. I think that James Wood is a June to All-Star break call-up, and I think that Mayo is probably August. Maybe that's way off, but we shall see.
Yeah, the AL, I just looked at, I'm looking at AL rookie stats right now on Fangraphs. It's sort of by war. Colton Cowser's first, 1.3, but he's been cooling off of late. Willier Abreu is second. Wensiel Perez, third. Evan Carter, four. David Schneider is 5. And then the 179 hitting Austin Wells is 6th. Corey Lee, Rochelle Shenton, Lawrence Beller. Yeah, that's been great. And the National League has been phenomenal. Obviously, you got Yamamoto, you got Imanaga, you got Jared Jones. That's great. But yeah, not so much on the American League side. So I do think Kamner's at first. So I agree there. I'm a little more optimistic on Mayo. So I'll go him seconds, and then I'll go Wood last. I'm going to say it's already almost middle of May here, which is scary. I don't know. June, July for Mayo. I think Wood after that. And I think Kamner is up with the next. I think he's up this month. I think he's up by the end of May. Though it's so hard. These guys that you think are going to be up soon aren't guys that you like, oh, that person's still a month or two away. Oh, boom, they get the call. So it's so hard to predict these days what teams are going to do, but still a lot of good names down there. I don't think Horton's imminent, even though he's in AAA. But if there's an injury, you never know. Obviously, he's one of the tier one pitching prospects right now. But yeah, I do agree in the sense that I think this would be a little bit of a lull here. Maybe we get someone like, I don't know, Thomas Ajayi. Maybe we get Jonathan Rodriguez in Cleveland. I think he's a super undervalued name. We're going to get like a Robert Gasser later this week, probably. We'll get some guys like that, but yeah, maybe we're a little bit in the lull here for the stud names, so to speak. But another one, Shane Baz, he's still a prospect, depending on if you use the 45-day threshold or not. But Shane Baz has started a rehab assignment. He'll be back probably in a few weeks. Taj Riley's coming back soon, too. So some of the guys you can stash there for sure. But all right, let's move over to our Dynasty Risers and Fallers now. We will start with the Fallers and probably the biggest faller in terms of height, at least, on this list here with O'Neill Cruz. He had a home run today. Overall, 252, 299, 393 slash line. So not really hitting for as much power. Still on the 25, 15 power speed pace, which is nice. But at the same time, in the K rate balloon back up to where it was in 2022, which is really his only season with any legit sample size. Back when he had 361 plate appearances, K rate was 34.9% that year. It's 35.7 this year. And the ground ball rate has jumped nearly 12% up to 55.5. 76.6%. You know, everything else is in line with previous years. Zone contact, 78-79% range, which is slightly below average, but not terrible. You know, overall contacts around 69-70%. Again, not good, but not terrible either for a guy with his power and speed. But one thing I tweeted out earlier today, Chris, and I was thinking about it, like, why do we have O'Neill Cruz and Christopher Morel ranked so far apart? When you break it down, they're actually pretty similar guys. They both have a huge power speed upside, and yeah, Cruz, I would say, has higher overall upside. But we've seen Morel start to make those adjustments that Cruz has not made yet in his career, and he's still very young, 25. He still can, but I don't know why there's like this massive gap. Even in my own rankings, they were like 100 spots apart or so, and I think that's way too much. Cruz has dropped a bit. He hasn't dropped terribly far down my rankings, but he did drop about 25, 30 spots this update. Still top 100, but he's got some things he's got to figure out if he wants to really maximize the loud skill set that he has.
I would agree with you. And also, there's pretty bad splits too. Cruz is obviously a left-handed batter who has really struggled against a left-handed pitching, and he might just be on the verge of, I'm not going to say they're going to sit here and platoon him, but it hasn't been great at all across the board. He's hitting just 128 against lefties. He's striking out a ton. He's been sheltered. He's still striking out a ton against them. Against righties, looks pretty decent. 302, 356, 469. But again, where's the home runs? He's whiffing a ton. He's chasing a ton. The plate discipline is not good. He hits the ball hard. Okay, great. Like, he's a good runner. Okay, great. But you have to make contact. And you know, I think that, yeah, you want to bank on the kind of upside that he does offer, which is very enticing. But again, he's got to show something more. He's 25 years old. Morel's 24 years old. And Morel is showing better contact skills. He's showing better plate discipline. He's hitting the ball nearly as hard. He's barreling it up at a higher rate. So this is an interesting debate. And I do wonder myself, what's this going to look like within the next couple of months? And I think that Cruz, in my opinion, is on the verge of like taking a pretty big tumble, because before we've always had an excuse. It was like, oh man, like he's really young. He had just come up. He's figuring it out. And then it looks like he's putting it together last year. Oh, and then the injury. So like we have an excuse. Okay, we can't drop him too much. Like he played Cruz played 9 games. He's hurt. And then this year, okay, he's healthy now. He's playing every day. And the results are still, meh. So I think O'Neill Cruz really does need to show something. He has a chance of taking a pretty big tumble, because at some point we have to acknowledge that O'Neill Cruz is actually doing something rather than just hypothetical, okay, this guy could put it together. So we could say that about a lot of people. And at this point, O'Neill Cruz really hasn't done that. So it does have me a little bit concerned, I'll say.
Yeah, no, absolutely it does. And you know, this year, Cruz has struck out. I went back to 2022. He struck out. That was the other big season he had in terms of playing time. 59 strikeouts and 111 plate appearances. That's over 50% that year. And for his career, in 161 plate appearances against lefties, 48.4% strikeout rate. 162, 224, 284 slash, 78 strikeouts and 11 walks in 161 plate appearances. That is not good. It's near 50% K rate is never going to get the job done, even if it is against a lefty-on-lefty matchup. That's just, they're not going to throw him out there all the time. I think they're giving him a chance to try to figure it out because, A, the talent level, and B, who else are they going to put out there in his place? Let's be honest here. So they were giving him this chance, but how much longer is that chance going to be? Like, how much longer is the leash here for Cruz against lefties? Because it has not just been bad. It's been downright freaking terrible and has not gotten better this season. It's not because, oh, it was bad 2 years ago and now he's made strides. Nope, still terrible. But yeah, I hope he figures it out because he's so much fun. Like when he was mashing in spring training, that was fun. Everyone was taking notice. Everyone was tuning in. Everyone was talking about it. And now we're seeing the other end of the spectrum with O'Neill Cruz, because the peaks and the valleys here are both very large, unfortunately. But the next one here, Gleyber Torres has really done absolutely nothing so far this year. In 156 plate appearances, one home run, three steals, 216, 290, 266 slash line. I mean, Chris, where did the power go with Gleyber Torres? Back-to-back years, 24, 25 home runs. Slug was around 450. Hard hit rate was above 40% each of the last 2 years. And it's dropped down to 30.8% this year. And that just that one home run that I mentioned here. You seeing any cause for optimism in the turnaround from Gleyber? I mean, it's going to be consistent the last few years, but not so far this year.
Yeah, he's had his ups and downs. I think that the expectations were so sky high after the 2019 season in which he hit 38 homers. That was obviously never going to be him. I think he hit 17 of them in Baltimore or something stupid like that. But you look in the last 2 years, he's been steady, 24 and 25 home runs, 10 and 13 stolen bases, a 257 and a 273 average, last year being the 273 average for Gleyber Torres. And then this year, it's not been great so far. The average exit velocity has dropped pretty significantly. The barrel rate's cut in half to 4%, which is among the worst in the league, which is not great. The launch angles have gotten worse, and not necessarily in a bad way, just inconsistent. Like, he's seeing a lot more pop-ups versus, like, healthy fly balls. That makes sense. The ground ball rate's not up noticeably, but the pop-ups are. So it's just really poor contact. Like, he's hitting some top balls. He's like just pop up under type balls as well. And when you look at like the contact data as well, the zone contact rate has dropped significantly. Like, he's whiffing in the zone so much more, from 87.3% last year to 76.3% this year for Gleyber. The overall contact rate also down about 8 percentage points. Don't know. It hasn't looked good. Something's obviously attributing to his timing being off here and whiffing in the zone much, much more. And I think that we got to figure out what's going on here. He is whiffing way more on fastballs, 19% whiff rate last year on fastballs, 29% this year for Torres. That's a big factor. The breaking ball stuff, it's fine. It's not, he's actually making more contact on breaking balls than he did last year. So it's getting eaten up by fastballs. I think that's something to consider here with Gleyber, but I do think he comes around. Like you say, he's been so consistent. I think those numbers will trend in the right direction. Right now, it hasn't been pretty at all. 561 OPS is not good, but year over year, Glaber's been so consistent that I think he will be okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too. I think we've started settling into accepting Gleyber for what he actually is, which I think the last couple of years, I think that's what you could expect from Gleyber. He's hit like 260, 270, get you mid-20s home runs, give you, it's been 10, 11, 12 steals, something like that. Score a decent amount and drive in a decent amount in that Yankees lineup. A solid across-the-board contributor that doesn't really stand out in any one area, but end of the year, you go, look, he's a top 100 player again this year. He was top 8 at second base or whatever. And I still think that guy is in there. Might not look like it right now. I do think there's a nice bounce back in store here. And I feel the same way about this next guy, but at the same time, I'm not sure he's going to get a chance to. That's James Outman with the Dodgers. Obviously, Gleyber's sticking in that lineup, but Outman's already started to lose a bit of playing time, especially with the emergence of a guy like Andy Páez, who we've talked about a few times over the last few weeks on this podcast. You look at Páez, Outman, and this was a pretty hot name entering draft season this year. Went 23-16 as a rookie last year, 86 runs, 248, 353, 437. And a lot of things have actually gotten better or stayed about the same for Outman this year. Yeah, the barrel rate's tumbled about 4.5%, but EV and hard hit are basically identical to last year. He's hitting fewer ground balls, more line drives. Zone contact's actually up 7%. Overall contact up around 6%. Chasing a little bit more, but not at a terrible level. So it's odd to see some of these improvements take place, but just the overall production has not been there. Launch angle is about the same as well. Sweet spot's actually up, still running a good amount, 80th percentile sprint speed. I don't know, Chris, what do you make of this? Because Outman has just not been doing well. The metrics have been all right, and as I mentioned, sometimes even better than last year. But he's also hitting under 190 against all three pitch types. So what do you make of what we've seen from Outman, and would you be looking to buy low right now?
Yeah, I don't want to call it last year a one-hit wonder. I think it's a little soon to say that for Altman, honestly. She did struggle with strikeouts last year. That's obviously was the question, is how much contact would he make? The contact rates are fine, actually. His zone contact rate's up 7 percentage points. He's running at 80% zone contact, which is really good. The overall contact rate improved by 6 percentage points this year. So contact has not been an issue at all. You look at that, I'm like, all right, okay, what's going on here? You look, the ground ball rates are down. He's hitting way more line drives and healthy amount of fly balls. Pulling the ball at the same rate as last year. And so looking under the hood is so confusing for me to look at this and say, okay, obviously he's not getting the barrels. He's still barreling it up at a 7% clip. It was 11.1% last year. The average EV is up. The launch angle, like I mentioned, everything was same in the batted ball profile. The sweet spot percentage is up. I'm so intrigued by what has gone wrong for James Altman. Look, here's the big difference. 343 BABIP last year, 211 BABIP this year. And I know people may say 343, that's outrageous. For a guy that hits the amount of line drives he does with the high-end sprint speed, that BABIP is not that high in all actuality. So I think we can factor this to a couple things. A little bit of bad luck, which that's obviously an issue of its own. A BABIP's really low. But a low BABIP doesn't cause you to run a 553 OPS or a 293 slug. So I think we need to see something from Altman. I'm not ready to completely write him off. I'm like, buy with caution. I'm not like going all in to buy low on him. But it is interesting to look under the hood and say, all right, things don't look as bad as they do on the surface. But to be in the Dodgers, you've got to be so good. And that's the concern here, is that despite him providing decent value in the field, may not matter, because the Dodgers are going to move on without you, buddy. If you're not hitting, time to move on, because they got guys, and they got guys that are ready to perform. Obviously, we've seen when Pa has come up and hit the ground running. And I'm afraid that we could see James Altman get left behind here just because he's not putting it together at all.
Yeah, and he's been sitting against lefties. They have pretty stark, splits here. Like they don't use Lux against lefties. They don't use Altman against lefties. They haven't even been starting Will Smith much against lefties either. And all it's funny, the four bench guys they have right now only start against lefties. On the bench, they have all righties. They have Austin Barnes, their backup catcher. They got Miguel Rojas. They got Chris Taylor and Kike Hernandez. All those guys only start against righties. The Dodgers have, it's a very strict plan here. So I wonder, is Altman just a strong set platoon bat at this point that doesn't start against lefties? He's going to be limited to 500, 550 plate appearances or so. I do think that he's going to bounce back. We look at the metrics. Again, they're all pretty similar or up, and still a lot of fantasy-friendly metrics here and skill set, but maybe we did go a little overboard. I think, admittedly, and I was guilty of that as well, pushing him up too high over the offseason into spring training this year. But I still think there's a guy that's going to provide some decent value there. So, yeah, I would, in general, I would buy low right now on Altman. Next one here, guy that I'm personally not looking to buy low on. I've been very vocal about this over the years. Nolan Gorman right now, 4 home runs and 125 plate appearances, 175, 248, 325 slash line. K rate has been over 30% every year, 33.6% this year. Still has an 11.1% barrel rate. He always has ideal launch angles. Super high sweet spot percentage, 44.4%. But at the same time, his average exit velocity is down 5.3 miles an hour from 91 to 85.7. And the hard hit rate is down 13.8%. That's massive. 48.5 down to 34.7. And zone contact rates have been always low, 74% or below every year, 71.3% this year. That is not good. Overall contact rate is around 62%. These are just, there's nothing in this profile, Chris, outside of, oh, he barrels it and his good launch angles. Nothing else gives me any hope with Gorman. And I just wonder if he doesn't turn this around soon, if he's going to start losing some time down the road to someone like Thomas DeJay-Z or whoever else it might be. Yeah, I am not looking to buy low on Gorman right now, but what say you?
Yeah, I think Gorman's a profile that everybody wants to dream on. And I know that there was some hate preseason when we talked about him, not as this buy or whatever. Gorman kind of is what he is. Like, can he make improvements? Yeah, absolutely. I believe that. But right now, it's a weird profile that he's not going to provide any value with his glove. Every bit of value is going to have to come with his bat to, you know, provide any value to the Cardinals. And this is a team that's always put value on defense. Gorman, you know, I don't know. It's tough to look at him. He's barreling the ball. He's got 11% barrel rate, but nothing really to show for it. It's weird because his average EV is down like 5 miles an hour from last year. That seems notable, but the barrel rate still 11%, which is good. That's a 77th percentile. He hits the ball in the sweet spot so often, like ideal launch angles. I do think that he's probably underperforming a bit, but again, the hard hit rates dropped from 48.5% to 34.5%. That's really notable too. But the contact skills are really bad. Why was I worried about Nolan Jones coming into 2024, and why did I not get him anywhere? He had a 72% zone contact rate last year, which is horrifically bad. Nolan Gorman, 72% last year, 71.3% in the zone this year. The overall contact rate's really bad as well. So there are plenty of reasons to be concerned with Nolan Gorman. And I think that I'm not sure he ever makes enough contact to be a guy, okay, it's passable for the power that he provides. Yeah, I'm not really in on him at all at this point. And I know he's still young. He can figure things out, but not really somebody that I'm looking to buy.
Yeah, his contact rates are considerably lower than what I would be like okay with, like those passable rates that you were saying, Chris, for someone with his power. If he was like, for me, like that threshold is like upper 70s zone and pushing 70 overall. Yeah. If you're there, I'm like, all right, they're still below average. They're not great. Huge power. It can get by. But he is on both of those a good 5, 6, 7% lower than that and has not even sniffed either of those rates in his career. Like I said, his best rates were his rookie year, 74 zone and 65.5 overall. Those are still lower than I would like to see. So, yeah, I'm not in on Gorman. I just love him as a prospect, but not anymore. I am pretty much 2 feet out the door on Nolan Gorman. Last guy in the follower section here has the same amount of home runs as Chris and I so far this season. That is Spencer Torkelson, big old goose egg in the home run department through 152 plate appearances, slashing 221, 291, 309. Another guy where I mean, I think this is like a pretty common question here on this podcast. Where has the power gone? Obviously, Comerica is not great for power. I think it's bottom five over the last few years for right-handed power, so that doesn't really help him much at all. But we saw Torque, like he was trending up this offseason after the way he ended last year, Chris, but it's all gone downhill. Barrel rates dropped 12% down to 2% overall. Hard hit rates dropped 12.9%. What are you making of Torque right now?
It's been a rough go for sure. And then to hear, he didn't even get a vote of confidence from his manager, which was hard to hear when you know, they ask about him and he's getting not good reviews. That's a major red flag for me. He's picked it up a little bit in the last few games. He has had a hit in each of the last four, which is good. And he's shown a little bit of doubles power, at least. He's had three doubles in the last four games. But still, overall, things don't look good for Spencer Torkelson. How low do you sell here is the question. He's falling, but how low am I willing to sell on tour? Because even last year, yeah, he put up 31 home runs, which was awesome. But there were some still things in the profile that were like, I don't really know here. So I'm definitely concerned. He's seen a huge drop, like you mentioned, across the board in StatCast data. He is really showing whiffs against like changeups, which has been the big thing. He's not whiffing much more against breaking balls, and he's whiffing less against fastballs, actually, which is good. But I will say it's not the whiffs that are really the issue. It's the fact that he's not getting around on these inside fastballs. Like, he doesn't have the bat speed to get around on them. And it's funny, when we saw him in the AFL in 2022, he was hitting all these like opposite field shots. And weren't shots, I would say like they're opposite field bloops, like over the second baseman. And thinking back to it, I was like, maybe he's just, they've got him working on like opposite field hits. It was really a lack of bat speed. That's what it was. And the same thing I see with Blaze Jordan. Blaze Jordan is the same type of guy where he doesn't have the bat speed and he's like hitting these little flares over second base. And that's what Torkelson is doing. Like, he's just not getting around on fastballs, which is a little bit concerning for me. I do think he picks it up, obviously, from this level. He's not going to go homerless the rest of the season, but he's killing your fantasy teams. I get that completely. So I'm willing to sell, even sell a little bit low, but how low am I willing to go is the question. Can you take a buyer? Good luck. I think that's really tough to get a good buyer right now for Torque, but it all depends on the return that you can get for him. I am very concerned.
Yeah, I think some people were hoping he'd turn in like this top 50 overall player, and I don't see that, and I didn't see that even when he was going well last year. I thought, like, all right, this guy could settle in as like a top 100-ish guy, but I think there's a future, it's a higher percent chance that he's closer to a top 150 guy than a top 50 guy. I just don't think he has that upside. To get top 50 with no speed, you got to bring more to the table than Torque does. Hit for more average, hit for more power. Could he get back to top 100 levels? Sure, I'm not going to rule that out. He's still young. We've seen what he can do in spurts, but yeah, I think he's just more of a, yeah, he's gonna be a, he could be a decent corner infielder. And I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that you're going to be excited to, you know, plug in as your starting first baseman for fantasy. Right now, I feel like what I thought about Alec Bohm the last few years was, yeah, Bohm's decent. Obviously, Bohm's doing very well this year. We talked about him last episode or two episodes ago, whatever it was. But it's kind of where Bohm was. All right, he's decent. And he'll give you a little bit of average, a little bit of pop, but nothing that's going to really be a huge impact for you. And that's what I feel about Torque right now. But it's not all bad in Detroit. Obviously, they have Tarik Skubal rising to maybe top three pitcher in the game right now. But a couple other names we're going to talk about here. One hitter, one pitcher, starting with Riley Green, who has been really picking things up here of late. Overall, 254, 373, 515 slash line, 9 home runs, scored 28 runs right now. Expected metrics are higher than his actual right now, like 560 X slug, 268 XBA, and just a lot of red on the Savant page. Barrel rate's up to about 19%. Hard hit rate's pretty in the 46, 47% range, which is where it's been the last few years. Walk rate has almost doubled. A lot of good here, Chris, for Riley Green. He's not running at all, zero steals so far, but if he's going to be hitting for more power and finally getting into that 25-30 homer pop that we all thought he could get to, you'll take that. I hope he does start giving you at least a little bit of speed, but a lot of encouraging signs here for Riley Green so far.
Yeah, I don't even need him to steal bases. Like, he was never really a type that was going to steal many. I think people had that hope, but I never really saw him as a stolen base threat. If he gives me five, okay, like, I'm good with that. There's been definite changes in the profile, and it's really evident. Just hitting more balls in the sweet spot. He hit the ball really hard last year. They turned into barrels this year. 19% barrel rate right now is just off the charts good. Sweet spot percentage is up 7 percentage points. That's huge. He's walking more. He's being more selective with the pitches that he's swinging at. Those are notable. The ground ball rate's down 6 percentage points. More fly balls. That's obviously the recipe here. He's not even pulling more balls, which is huge. Once he gets to that poolside power, and okay, like, we're really cooking. And he's hitting fastballs much better this year. Last year, had a 22.2% whiff rate on fastballs. This year, 14.6%. Swinging and missing way less on fastballs, and swinging and missing less on breaking balls too, which is pretty notable to me. The contact numbers are pretty much in line. Gain a percentage point of increase to the zone and overall contact, which is fine. But I'm looking at the profile, and I think that Riley Green's breaking out before our eyes, and it's really pretty to watch and see, because, you know, he's barreling it up at elite rates right now, and he's a ton of fun.
Yeah, no, we've talked a lot about these hitters that hit the ball hard but into the ground, and all they need to get more lift on the ball and elevate more consistently, and how that's easier said than done. But Green is an example of it can be done. It's difficult to do, absolutely, but it can be done. Ground ball rate has trended down about 6-7% each of the last 2 years. He was at 57% ground ball rate, then 49, now 42. More fly balls the last couple of years, more line drives as well. So it is possible. Barrel rate, again, way up. Launch angle has been trending up. Sweet spot rate has been trending up too. Green is doing it. And if we can get 30-plus home runs out of Riley Green and like a 260-270 average and a solid amount of runs in RBIs, and so he can be a pretty good four-category guy, yeah, that'll put him, you know, probably top 50 or so. And any steals he does add, even if it's just 5 or 6, that's just gravy right now. But the other one here in Detroit, we got Jack Flaherty, who's having a massive rebound. And I didn't see this coming, though. It feels like everybody that leaves St. Louis just get better recently. And we talk about all the outfielders, like Arozarena, Adelise, etc. But, man, like Flaherty is another example of it. He was floundering in St. Louis, but now his 7 starts this year with Detroit, and he's got 0 wins so far this year, which is shows that wins is just a terrible category. I hate it, but we got to use it because it's still the standard in fantasy, or maybe quality starts will push it out eventually, but we shall see. But 7 starts, 386 ERA, but a 298 xERA, and you're looking at a 3.5% walk rate for a guy that was over 10% each of the last 2 years. 32.9% K rate for a guy that had been under 23% there the last couple of years. Let's look at the Savant page. A lot of red, and he's still only 28. It feels like Flaherty should be like 31, 32 at this point, but nope, still only 28 years old and off to a really good start. So, Chris, are you believing in this kind of new look Flaherty that we're seeing this year, or would you be maybe looking to sell high right now?
You look and it feels like he's been around forever, just 28 years old. And this is like prime for pitchers this age. And what are the, like, how has he gotten better? I think is the question. What is he doing differently this year? He's throwing the slider a lot more, which I think obviously is a huge factor because the slider is a really good pitch. Like, he's got 41% whiff rate on the slider. So naturally throwing that pitch more is really good. The four seam has a 30% whiff rate, which is very high for a fastball. That's awesome to see. The fastball is up a tick. It's getting more right. He's locating it better, which is huge. I think that plays a factor into this too, where with the improved fastball, everything else plays up. Then the curveball getting whiffs, that's obviously huge. 45% on that with 41% on the slider. That's nuts. And that's pretty much it. He's throwing a changeup on occasion to lefties, but not often. So four-seam slider curve, and he's throwing and mixing well enough where it's okay. Like, this looks pretty legit when you look under the hood and you say you see it, everything there. He's just locating. I think that's the biggest thing, is he's going to have to continue to hit these spots like down and away with the slider and the curveball. And he's going to have to continue to hit his spots with the fastball too. The walk rate, lowest of his career by far at 3.5%, which is awesome to see. You know, I don't want to say this should be the expectation going forward, but I do think Flaherty is pretty legit. And it's interesting to see him. He's in a better pitcher park now in Detroit. We've talked about the Detroit hitters, but it's a much better pitcher's park for Flaherty. So I'm intrigued. I think that he certainly should be rostered everywhere. And I believe to an extent that Jack Flaherty has rebounded and he's legit.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be near 30% K minus BB rate guy, but can he be somewhere in the middle of the last 2 years and what he was a handful of years ago when he was breaking out and was considered an ace back then? I mean, I still think there's plenty of potential here. And then obviously the changes have been very encouraging. He got rid of the cutter as well, which was just a terrible pitch for him last year. He only used it 9% of the time last year, but still had a 318 batting average against and a 545 slug. He's ditched that. He's condensed the arsenal, as Chris alluded to here. Sometimes I think there is a thing as throwing too many pitches. Like, I asked that about Joe Musgrove. Musgrove throws like 7 pitches. I think that's too many. He's condensed the arsenal a little bit. He's really focusing more on that four-seam slider curve, which he's throwing about 93.5%, 94% of the time combined right now, and it's working for him. I don't think he's going to be an ace again, but can he be like, you know, a top 30, top 40 pitcher moving forward? Absolutely. So I'm buying in that regard, but if you maybe want to try to capitalize on this right now and the namesake of how he used to be an ace, if you can get a good return, I wouldn't be opposed to that, but I'm okay holding as well, as I think a lot of this is legit, and he's definitely, you know, looking better than he did the last couple of years with St. Louis, that is for sure. Next name on the list here, we'll go out of Detroit. A couple of fun middle infielders here. We got Luis Garcia with the Washington Nationals and Bryce Terang with the Milwaukee Brewers. You know, Garcia has been really quietly having a pretty good year in 110 plate appearances, 327, 382, 495 slash line. He's got 3 home runs and 7 steals so far. And I think the biggest thing here, most notably, is the massive increase in power, Chris. Garcia was one of those guys where it's like, all right, he's a waiver wire pickup every now and then. Nothing spectacular in the profile. He'll hit for a decent average, but that's really about it. And now you're seeing a guy that was around 36.5% hard hit rate each of the last 2 years. EV 87, 88, barrel 6-7%. He's now up to 11.3% barrel rate, 90.6 mile an hour average exit velocity, and a 52.5% hard hit rate. Still hitting ground balls too much, which is still limiting him a bit, but it's been very encouraging to see these improvements in his quality of contact so far.
Yeah, he's been awesome to watch, and he just caught my eye early in the year because he broke his max EV really quick, and he had 2 batted balls over 110 within like the first 4 games, and he had only done that twice or 3 times his entire. I think it was like 2 of his highest 5 career batted balls were in the first 4 games of the season. It's like, all right, this is really interesting. And obviously, he's not gained a huge power, but he does have 3 home runs so far in 110 plate appearances. He had 9 homers last year. He probably shatters that, but maybe closer to a 15 home run bat. He's stolen 7 bases so far with 9 last year. But with Garcia, it's always been about the contact, and he's making good contact. Yes, the ground ball rates are a little high right now, but it hasn't deterred the barrel rate, which is good. 11.3% barrel is really good. Hard hit rate has gone up 15 percentage points for Luis Garcia. And obviously the contact skills are still playing. He hasn't really sacrificed anything to get to more power. His zone contact rate's actually up. It's 87.8, which is very good. The overall contact rate has dropped a hair, but at the end of the day, like, it's okay. Like, you're making so much contact in the zone. That's awesome to see. Yeah, I think Luis Garcia Jr., 23-year-old, still has a projectable frame on him at 6'2". It's not actually surprising to see him tapping, or considering he was rushed to the majors so young, and it's taken a little while to get going into his own. So we'll see, but I like Garcia and what he's done so far.
So do I. And I said the quality of contact, that's what's holding him back. And yeah, he's still not going to be a massive power threat. The fact that he's an okay runner too. I'm not saying, I don't think he's going to be 30 steal guy either, but if he can just get to like 15 to 18 of each, that would be great to go along with a pretty solid average. And OBP should be fine. Not a super high walk rate guy, but that is up to 8.3% as well. And I think he could put himself in middle infield territory, a guy that was usually more like bench depth guy or waiver wire, depending on your league depth. He could maybe work his way up into being an actual guy that's going to be on your roster and maybe even a starter for you at middle infield or utility, whatever. Maybe a guy that you have to plug in at starting second baseman due to injury or something like that. But yeah, a lot of good in the profile. And yeah, I think I'm mostly buying into this kind of new look, revamped Luis Garcia that we're seeing. And as for Terang, it's a much different profile. Already 14 steals this year. He's not Ellie. He doesn't have 21 or whatever Ellie's up to now. Ellie had 2 more today, by the way. But in 131 play appearances, Terang's hitting 316, 382 OBP, has those 14 steals, which I think is still second in the National League behind Ellie. I haven't checked in a few days and pull that up, see if anybody's passed him in the National League. Cunha's tied with him, and then, yeah, they're 7 behind Ellie, but then it's a drop down to Trey Turner at 10. It's easily a, you know, top three steal guy so far. Not a lot of power to speak of, though the EV is up 3.5 miles an hour. Still a well below average power guy. But do you think that his ability to hit for a decent average, zone contact's 89% right now, overall contact is 87%, so very high there. Do you think the ability to hit for a high average and steal a ton of bags gives him enough value to offset the power inefficiencies here, Chris? I guess he's someone you'd be targeting right now.
Yeah, I think it's one of those interesting profiles that fits certain teams. For fantasy purposes, if you can get a guy like this that you draft him late, that's one thing. Obviously, we know Terang is going to excel in the stolen base department. Like, that's always been a given. Like, he's going to give you stolen bases and that. The power, actually, the average EV is pretty significantly from last year, a near almost 4 mile an hour jump, which is pretty substantial. Meanwhile, his max EV is 4 miles an hour lower than his max last year. It's always funny to look at. The art hit rate's still really mediocre at the end of the day. But what's he doing with those? He's not really turning them into barrels. He's not going to get home runs. What he does do is make contact especially well against fastballs and respectable contact against breaking balls. Two, he's running a 55% ground ball rate, just putting it on the ground and trying to beat him out kind of thing. He does not pull the ball at all. So if you're expecting anything from Bryce Terang, like the power department, I'd probably not. The zone contact rate's up 7 percentage points to 89%, which is very high. The overall contact rate is also absurdly high, too, at 87.5%. So some of the best contact in baseball right now. It's showing. He's putting a ton of balls in play. He's using his speed. He's making things happen. Also showing decent glove in the field. Terang, he's interesting. I think that the deeper the league, points league, like he becomes more interesting. But for like a shallow, like 5x5 league, if he needs speed, okay, like he can play. Just know that there's limitations in the profile. And at the end of the day, I think he is going to be what he is. So I'm not like going all in on him, but I do think that he has some interesting traits.
Yeah, I have both him and Elliot in one league, and I'm just absolutely running away with steals right now because of those two. And yeah, like, I think he's a guy that this is what we hoped, like, Estrella Ruiz would be, what we hoped Victor Scott would be, and Terang here, who, you know, was a decent prospect in his own right, but not a highly touted prospect coming up through Milwaukee system. He's doing it, and the contact rates are legit. He's always been a guy that you put the ball in play. So maybe he's not 316 guy, 280 plus, absolutely. OBP will be decent, and if he can, he's going to play regularly, given the fact that he's a good defender, like you mentioned, Chris, and his speed impact, his contact skills. So if he can play a full season, steal you 40-plus bags, hit you 280-plus, and maybe give you 70, 80 runs as well, that's a pretty good lineup there in Milwaukee. They've been one of the top offenses in baseball this year. So, yeah, I'm liking this kind of an odd profile, and you know, it's a profile you target if you need speed, but who doesn't need speed? And I think Terang is a guy that can definitely help you out and is pretty, I think, still fairly underrated as well. But one more name here to close out the show. And in fitting fashion, we'll close it out with a closer and go with Mason Miller, who, like, you look at his Savant page, it is just the darkest of reds on those sliders. In 13 appearances so far, he's already got 8 saves, 33 strikeouts in 16 and a third innings. And for those of you at home keeping track, that is more than 2 strikeouts per inning so far. 53.7% K rate. I'm just going to say all these metrics because they're so good across the board. 53.7% K rate, 7.4% walk rate. His XERA is 0.80. Average EV allowed 85.5 miles an hour. The max EV he's allowed is only 102.6. XBA is 086. XLUG's 134. WOBA's 189. Hard hit rate allowed is 19%. Like, I can go on and on here. Whiff rate on both the four-seamer and the slider is 48.6% right now. I already see some people asking or saying that he is the number one reliever for fantasy right now. It's hard to say no. It's super small sample size, and obviously the injury risk is there with him, as it is with all pitchers, but especially with a guy like Mason Miller. do you think he is there? Do you think he's already up there with the Diazes, the Durants, etc.? And is he the number one dynasty reliever right now, Chris?
Yeah, I think that it's hard to answer that right now with how good he's pitching. Nearly two strikeouts per inning, actually over two strikeouts per inning. 33 strikeouts in 16 innings is pretty wild. He's not allowing hard contact. He's missing every bat. The whiff rates are off the chart, like the best whiff rate in baseball, 48%. Gets chased out of the zone. Obviously, he pumps the fastball. He's got the slider. Like, it's everything you want to see. And Mason Miller does look like the best reliever in the game right now. You have to hope that he stays healthy. He's had a poor track record of health in the past. But at the end of the day, if he's out of the bullpen, maybe that changes a little bit. And I've long said that I thought the bullpen really was his best fit. And it's looking that way right now. So he may just, and people have asked, like, is he going to go back to being a starter? How can you push this guy back to being a starting pitcher with the performance like this? When you are performing at such an elite rate out of the bullpen, why in the world would you want to send this guy back out as a starter? I think you keep him as a reliever. He's one of the best in baseball, and it's hard to argue. I think that top tier is correct. If you don't have number one, I think that's fine, because at the end of the day, I think he belongs in that tier. One, two, three, whatever you want to put in. He's really good.
Yeah, moving him back to the rotation would be the most idiotic move Oakland could make. And granted, Oakland has not made a lot of great decisions, so they're oddly having a decent year this year and around 500, which no one ever thought would happen, especially me. But yeah, Mason Miller is made for the closer role. You look at it, and his command isn't even that great. Look at the heat maps on this 14-man run slider. They're not great, but when you're throwing 101, 102, 103 on the four-seamer, he means averaging 100.7 with the movement he has on that, plus the slider, which is basically a wiffle ball, elite vertical movement and horizontal movement. He's literally up there throwing, like, what are those blitz balls or whatever that just get super insane movement. That's what he's doing with fastballs, with baseballs right now. So, yeah, you can get by with that, and he is. Everything about the profile is just absolutely sexy, and, yeah, I think he should stay in that role moving forward. I think there's no question about that, and the only thing holding him back from being the next elite guy that's top three reliever year after year is health. That's really the one thing. But, yeah, it's been really fun watching Mason Miller every time he comes in this year. It's always must-watch baseball for sure. But that is going to wrap us up. Thanks to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. You know, obviously, go check out all the great stuff going on over at RotoBaller. Use that code TOOLSHED to get 10% off any premium package. And we will be back with you again next week. But until then, everyone take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.